Hi, everybody. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic, and I am glad to be here, glad to be sober. Y'all are very cheerful for this hour and loud for this hour of the morning. I'm usually at this hour, I'm hiking by myself in quiet and solitude, and it's a little overwhelming, but I'm awake now for sure. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the way I get to live my life as a result of being a sober participating member in AA. I never had it so good, seriously. I started drinking when I was 13. Let me just check the time here. Started drinking when I was 13. I was at a party. I got drunk. I woke up in bed the next morning with a Marine that I didn't know. It's not what I meant to do, you know, but it set the tone for what my drinking was going to look like. As I like to describe it, when I drink, I get real friendly. And so I developed a reputation in high school for being the friendly girl. And that's not a reputation any girl wants. I certainly didn't want it. It made me feel bad. I knew people were talking about me and I felt bad about that. But I don't ever remember at that time thinking about not drinking. Like, gosh, maybe if I didn't drink, I wouldn't behave this way. That thought never crossed my mind until years later. I got married when I was 18 because somebody asked. Got divorced when I was 18 and a half because we weren't drinking enough. I didn't know that's why I left him. But after I got sober, I realized that we used to do this thing. We were a young married couple. We didn't have much money. And so we'd get together with two or three other couples at one of our houses to play cards or something for an evening. And we'd buy one bottle of wine to split with six or eight people. And we'd mix it with 7-Up or something to stretch it. And that's what we would drink over the course of an entire evening. I didn't know then that that was just, you know, setting off the craving in me that was not being fulfilled. Anyway, I left him and I grew up in Newport Beach, about 50 miles south of LA. I moved up to LA and after I got divorced and I got a job as a secretary in a trucking company. And I behaved in that trucking company the same way I'd behaved in high school, which is to say, before I left that company, I knew most of those truck drivers in the biblical sense. You know, it was quite a reputation I developed there. My father was vice president of that company, which is how I got the job. And I, one day, apparently word of my behavior had reached his office and he called me one day to try to talk to me about it. I can't even think about it myself, really sober in the light of day. I certainly can't talk to Daddy about it. And so I said some terrible things to him on the phone. So he would just hang up and stop talking about this, which he did. And I quit the job because that's what I do. I'm a runner. And so I quit the job with no notice. You know, I just left and, I didn't speak to my father again except twice, once at a wedding, once at a funeral, when we just, you know, came face to face and kind of had to say hello until I got sober in AA. And you taught me about making amends. And I made amends to my father. And as a result of that, I had a good relationship with him until he passed away now a number of years ago now. But you gave that to you gave me my father back. I would never have spoken to him again, I'm certain, you know, and but you gave that to me. And of course, so much more. I just, you know, job to job to job because I drink and I bring my drinking into the workplace and I behave badly with everybody that I work with or your spouse. It doesn't really matter to me. And so I create obviously kind of an ugly mess wherever I am and I have to leave. I never got fired from a job, but I quit every job I ever had. Behind drinking, behind something that I'm the kind of drinker who quits jobs after office Christmas parties without going back to clean out my desk because I know I can't face you in the light of day after what happened last night. Here's how I drank it out with my boss and my coworkers one night. We're bar hopping around downtown LA and we wound up in a strip club. I'm sure everybody was drunk that night, but apparently I was the drunkest of them all because when we wound up in the strip club, I was the only one who auditioned for a job. It's not my fault. You know, I didn't intend to do that. We're sitting at this table. I got up, excused myself to go to the ladies' room. And the ladies' room was kind of down the hall behind the stage. And I bumped into the owner of the bar in the hallway there. And I believe I was making some derogatory remarks about the caliber of his entertainment. And he said something along the lines of, well, if you think you're such hot stuff, have at it. You know, and apparently I thought I was all that kinds of hot stuff. So a moment ago, I was sitting at the table with my boss and my coworkers dressed much as I am now in a nice outfit, you know, that I'd worn to work that day. And moments later, I appear on the stage essentially dressed in nothing. And there was that moment when my boss's eyes and mine met, when he realized who that was up there. I happened to be looking at him at the moment when it struck him that that was me up there. I'll never forget. This happened well over 50 years ago. I'll never forget the look on his face ever. I mean, it's a moment seared in my mind. I quit that job without going back to clean out my desk. You know, it gets worse. You know, I went to work as a go-go dancer. In my mind, that seemed a lot classier than stripping. It's not, but I convinced myself it was. I worked in some terrible dive clubs as a dancer. I met the man who became my second husband at one of these clubs where I was working. And, you know, he was like the most inappropriate man in probably the state of California for me. And so, of course, we moved right in together and got married. But, you know, I'm an alcoholic. And although I'm married again, I'm still behaving like I'm single. So you might guess that we had a lot of trouble in that marriage, all caused by my behavior. You know, it just gets worse. I really want to talk about sobriety, so I'll just say it just gets worse. I started going to jail. You know, it never gets better. If you're an alcoholic, it never gets better. One night I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I was drunk when I called. My husband was gone. He was a gambler, so he was gone a lot at night. And I was home alone, and I was very drunk, and I called AA. And a real nice man answered the phone at central office and asked me if I was having a problem with alcohol. I said that I was, and I started to cry, and I was embarrassed about crying, but I was just drunk enough that I stayed on the phone anyway. And he talked to me quite a while and told me where a meeting was the following night, which was the Saturday Night Way of Life meeting. And we hung up, and of course I continued to drink until I passed out. You know, I've thought about that often. What are the odds that the night that I called, the guy who was working central office was a member of the Pacific Group who directed me? I mean, it's all this wonderful synchronicity, you know. I don't know that I would have stayed sober somewhere else. I mean, of course, we don't know that. I've been to a lot of meetings in a lot of different places. And I've walked in meetings where nobody says hello. You know, you sit down, it's like you could be alone in the room for all the warmth that you get there. I'm not saying that's everywhere, but I'm saying I have been to meetings like that. Thank God that the guy who answered the phone at central office sent me to the Pacific Group where that just never happens, you know. I went to the Saturday night meeting, and it started at 8:30. I got there at 8:28, and there was a man standing at the door, put out his hand and said, "Hello, my name is Clint. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." I believe it is the most important thing anybody does in a meeting, because it made me feel welcome, and my life began. You know, I got a sponsor, and I started taking these steps, and I was not a happy camper. I mean, I didn't want to do any of it. My sponsor told me to go to meetings every night, and I explained to her that my husband wasn't going to like it. She said it didn't matter if he liked it. It didn't matter if I liked it. She said, I guarantee you, if you do it, your life's going to change. And the miracle for me is that I did it. I didn't do it happily, but I did it. And that's why I'm here 46 years later, still sober. You know, as I said, I started taking these steps, and I, you know, was stumbling my way through them. And I'm thinking that the problems in my marriage are his fault, because I'm working the spiritual program now, so it can't be my fault anymore. We were now fighting about Alcoholics Anonymous. He thought I was coming here to meet men. Now, I had been cheating on him all the years we've been married, and I had noticed there were men in AA for sure. And I wasn't really thinking about changing my lifestyle much, you know, so... But none of the men in AA appeared to be interested in me, which hurt my feelings. And it really made me mad that my husband was accusing me of something that I was not actually doing right at that minute. I was very indignant about it. How dare you accuse me of such a thing? Like I'm such a virgin, you know? So we're fighting all the time. And, you know, I was about 10 months sober, and I met a man in a meeting who looked good to me. Actually, I'd met a bunch that looked good to me, but this one looked bad. He was about 10 minutes sober. I saw him when he came in the room the first night. He had a Fu Manchu mustache and a shaved head. Oh, my heart started to pound. I literally leapt across a chair, shoved that chair into the aisle to get close to him to introduce myself. And my sponsor noticed and, you know, beckoned me over and reminded me that I was a married woman. And I said, "Yeah, but I'm pretty unhappy." And she said, "Nonetheless, you're married. And as long as you're married, Pat, I expect you to act married." Said, "I don't see this as a problem at all. I'll get divorced." And she said, "No, we in Alcoholics Anonymous don't think it's a good idea to make major moves in our first year of sobriety. Stay married, act married." Well, I was obsessed with this guy. I mean, come on. Why would God get him sober in my home group if he didn't mean for us to be together? It seems so clear to me. I don't know why she can't see that. His sponsor didn't see it either, I might add. But we were obsessed. And I know you understand obsession if you're in this meeting. It started for us with the deep, meaningful glances at each other across the meeting hall room. And then we're brushing up against each other in the coffee line several times. And I didn't even drink coffee then. And then he's walking me to my car after the meeting, and I'm parking further and further away from the meeting. And it's a little complicated to get together. I'm married. Obviously, we're not going to my house. He's a newcomer. He doesn't even have a place. But we're very resourceful people. We can make anything happen. I was working at the time at a record company in Hollywood, and he was very conveniently working in Hollywood as well at a porn bookstore. I arranged a long lunch hour at work one day for somebody to cover for me. And he didn't have a car either. So I picked him up at the bookstore and we went to a motel, and let's just say we got to know each other better. And I dropped him off at the bookstore that afternoon. I was driving back to my office, and it occurred to me in the car that I was 10 months sober, and I'd been sitting in meetings every night hearing you say pretty much every night that I was going to have to change everything about the way I was living, or I was most certainly going to drink. And I knew I was in a lot of trouble. I was terrified to tell my sponsor what I'd done, because she'd been quite clear in her direction about this guy, but I don't want to drink. And so I told her what I'd done, and she said, "You know, Pap, I don't think you're a woman who can cheat on her husband and stay sober, and you don't have to live that way anymore if you don't want to." Here's the thing. I've never wanted to live that way, drunk or sober. I never wanted to be that woman, ever. Wanting has never changed a thing, ever. I didn't see how you in Alcoholics Anonymous were going to help me change. I didn't get it at all. But here's what I did. First of all, I followed my sponsor's direction. A day at a time, I stayed away from that guy. A day at a time, I didn't call him up or take his calls or drive by that bookstore. When I saw him in meetings, I shook hands with a locked elbow. If you're new, this means we never got closer than the entire length of my arm. Hello. And I kept moving. I thought I should explain to him what was happening here. I ran that idea by my sponsor, and she said, "Oh, no, 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 he'll get the idea. No more conversations. No more conversations." And I heard her. I also really heard for me for the first time to my core that line that is read in pretty much every meeting I've been to for 46 years, "Half measures avail us nothing." And I knew for me this was going to be the big make it or break it. This was going to be, if I was going to drink, it was going to be over this. I knew it. And so I did it 100% the way my sponsor was suggesting I do it. I just simply stayed away from that guy. The obsession, of course, passed. Obsessions always pass. But the really good news for me is I don't live that way anymore. And I know you're looking at me thinking, "Well, of course you don't live that way anymore. You're 77 years old, for God's sake." So just to be clear, I haven't lived that way since I was 31 years old. And what a gift. I never dreamed that I could change my life in that regard. Never in my wildest imagination did I dream that. I had an opportunity to make amends to that husband a day at a time for the kind of wife that I had been. He died when I was 3.5 years sober. And when he died, I knew that I had 100% made my amends to him. And I felt grateful that I had listened to my sponsor when I just wanted to get out of that marriage. You know, I would have missed all of that. And I remember thinking that that's the payoff for doing the work. But here's the thing. It's not even close to the payoff, you know. God's vision for me, and presumably for you too, is so much greater than anything I can ever see on any day. After he passed away, I started dating Vince, who was a sober member of the Pacific Group. We fell in love and got married, and we had almost 30 years together. A good, strong, happy marriage, which I know for me would not have been possible had I not learned how to do that with my former husband. You know, but see what I mean about God's vision? When Vince passed away, oh God, Vince would be just crazy that I just gave him like half a minute in my talk. He used to say, "You know, you give your Willie," my second husband, actually the one who died, he said, "You give him way more time in your talk than you give me." Well, it's more important in terms of growth. But anyway, Vince, I love you in heaven. I got like 5 minutes left here. So moving on, you know, after he died, after Vince died, I worked a couple more years, and then I retired from my job and I moved out to the desert. And it was hard to leave the Pacific Group. I'd been in the Pacific Group for 36 years, and it was very hard to leave. But I knew before I moved, I had gone to meetings out there, and I knew I had picked out 3 meetings for sure that I liked, that I knew would be regular meetings, and they were regular meetings. I just recently moved from there back to Seal Beach. But for the 10 years that I lived in the desert, those meetings were my 3 regular meetings. Thank you. And I, because I knew how important that was to get connected. It is the most important thing in moving. As I said, I'm living in Seal Beach now, and I have one regular in-person meeting here, and I'm looking for others, you know, that are really close by. And because I know how important that is, you know, I love that, in the last few minutes that I have here, I just want to talk about, I guess you'd call it spiritual awareness. You know, I have always believed in God. I believed in God when I got here, but it was sort of an abstract, you know, general idea. I had no connection to God. I sort of felt like God had forgotten about me. Of course, I'm the one who walked away, not God. You know, I stopped thinking about God when I was behaving so badly as a teenager, because I knew God would forgive me for anything, but I also knew, as I'm asking, oh, please, for God, I'm so sorry I did this tonight. I knew I was going to do it again. So, you know, I just stopped going to God. And gradually over time, taking these steps, applying these principles of this program to my life, I have come into, a closer contact with God, as our steps promise us, you know. Don't misunderstand, it's not like every day I feel like God's on my shoulder and, you know, we're walking this path together. Most of the time I'm stumbling through life, you know, but every once in a while I have these moments. And Howard Pollins, who was now deceased, but he was a longtime sober AA member, he used to say, wherever you found God, bookmark that spot and visit it often. And I've got a few of those spots, you know. One of them, when I was about 10 years sober, Vince and I lived in Pasadena, and I worked in Century City. And so to get to work, I'd have to go down the Pasadena freeway, past Dodger Stadium, circle through downtown LA. And it's Los Angeles traffic, which is terrible in the mornings, of course. And so always, every morning, a little ways before Dodger Stadium, the traffic would slow to a complete stop. And then it would just creep through downtown. And I would be insane sitting in my car, clutching the steering wheel, cursing the traffic, the drivers, God, everybody. And I would do that all the rest of the way to work, just tensed and cursing. And why is this always happening to me? And it never occurred to me to maybe leave a little earlier, you know, whatever. Anyway, I did that at least for a year, maybe longer, but I'll admit to a year. Until one day, I'm driving to work and I get to that spot where, sure enough, the traffic stops. I'm all tensed up, ready to get into my little rant in the car there all by myself. And I happen to glance over to the right. And down the embankment of the freeway is Figueroa Boulevard. And across Figueroa is a bar that I worked in as a go-go dancer. I just came from a really nice house in Pasadena where the mortgage is current. And there's a husband there who loves and respects me. I'm in a decent car here. I'm going to go to a job where they think I'm fabulous. When I get off work, I'm going to go to an AA meeting, and I'm going to see my sponsor and see some women that I sponsor and my sober friends, and I'm going to enjoy a good meeting. I'm going to go home after that meeting with my husband. You know, I am not the same woman who did the things that I did in that bar down there and in the parking lot behind that bar. You can't get from down there to up here in this car, and yet here I am, you know. I started to cry sitting in my car. It makes me emotional every time I talk about it. I started to cry sitting in the car. I was so, so grateful for my life. That's one of the moments I visit often, you know. I'll tell you another one. You know, you never know where God's going to show up. I had a panel a few years ago to Chuckawalla Prison out in the desert, which is a men's maximum security prison. And the guys in this unit, whatever they call it, cell block, I don't know the lingo. Anyway, they're all lifers. And so, you know, none of them are going anywhere. And we would take a meeting out once a month. And it was very hard to get people on these panels because the application process was just hideous. It took like six, it was the paperwork was more than an inventory. It took about 6 months to get approved. So very few people were approved. So it might be my night to go. And there were only 2 or 3 other people I could ask to go with me because they were the only other approved people. And so it was the same little group of us that would go out every time. And, you know, you can only tell your story to the same people so many times before you feel like their eyes are going to glaze over. So we told our stories the first time, and then we started doing the steps. You know, we go out and do step 1. And then, so we got to step 9, and we were in the car on the way out there, and couple of people in the car said, we can't talk about step nine to these guys. These guys have done terrible things and they're never going to get out of here. And they're never going to be able to make amends. And this is terrible. And I said, well, you say what you want. My job is to share my experience. I'm talking about step nine. So we went out there and we all talked a little bit about step nine. And then the guys share, I'll be done in a second. The guys share, and it is the best meeting on amends I have ever been to. I am telling you, these guys are serious about sobriety. They're serious about trying to make amends for the terrible things that they have done. Again, that's another one. I get chills talking about that. I've been to a lot of meetings on amends. Talking about amends is maybe my favorite thing to do, but that particular meeting is the best one I have ever been to. You never know where God is going to show up. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being sober. Thank you so much, Lulu, for asking me to share.